Hello again, and welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth. So, hey, part two, baby. Oh, what a show we have lined up for you today. Jeremy's still out of a job. There's some new music, and it's a giggly one. We had a lot of fun. But hey, just a quick reminder, Quality Time Live is coming to you from Ellicott City on March 28th at Unusual Company, which is quite the spot. You can get all the ticket info at ericcomedy.com. That's Eric with a K, comedy with a C. Of course, me and Jeremy will be there. Jeremy, maybe, is Pogo the Clown. But we're also joined by 98 Rock's own Justin Schlegel and Joe Robinson. So get your tickets for that. Get lined up. Drop us a 5-star rating if you got a chance on whatever platform you listen to us on. But without further ado, get strapped in, turn the volume up to 11, and get ready for Highlander Part 2.
Hello, kiddies. It's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
I mean, this is uncomfortable. I feel like this is cruelty to animals more than anything. Like, you're just like, imagine if you just got slapped your whole body and then they just like, oh, just so I can bite you in half in a second.
I just want to rule. An international rule that says every animal you eat has to be dead first, you know?
No actual living creatures.
Yeah, unless maybe it's insect at night, then at least it's bearable.
I like a fresh fish. I don't need it to actually be alive. I like my steak. I don't need to bite it off while it's still writhing in pain.
I prefer not to see a frog completely ripped in half in somebody's mouth.
Yeah, that's a rough one. Anyway.
All right, welcome to Quality Time, everybody.
Hey, welcome to Quality. Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast, full of squality and time.
It's a good episode of The Family Guy.
Hell yeah, man.
Hey, why are you going to giant fit bridge here?
My Monopoly game.
I'm Todd McFarlane.
The creator of Spawn, Todd McFarlane. Yes.
I make many different voices. There's Spewy and the fat guy. I'm Todd McFarlane. Spawn.
My Monopoly gay. Yeah, Jeremy. So Highlander part one in the bag. Now we're here in part two. Excited? Where are we at, Jer?
Oh, we got more music lined up.
We got so much more shit lined up for you guys. Not just Kurgan drops, but all types of drops.
My favorite. Probably one of my favorite Joe's Robinson theme that we've made so far.
Oh, should we do some of Joe Robinson's corrections to start off the show? Is that what you're going
to
leave
on? You run the format. I'll tell you what. I'm just trying to wet the vagina.
Let's just kick it right off for Joe Robinson's corrections.
Imagine there's no Joe's corrections. If we didn't make big shit up on Quality Time, then we wouldn't be drinking or having such a good time. Then we would be sober. Imagine all the corrections. And we wouldn't be so dumb.
Good work, Jeremy. Good work, man. Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful
thing.
Who
doesn't want a Yoko Ono marathon?
So Joe Robinson's corrections this week. This is on me. I called UB40 UB20 for Red Red Wine.
Well, that was back when they were in the 60s. When
yeah,
they were
they're UB20 back then.
UB40 airplane.
Little known fact. Yeah, that was... I messed that up. Oh, well. He goes... He also says Jack and Jill is the Sandler movie you're trying to think of, because I was trying to think of Jack and Jill in the Valentine's Day
where
one.
He dresses up like a woman,
as his
sister, yeah,
with Al Pacino, with my Frappuccino. Now, by the way, Joe mentioned that My Bloody Valentine. He's seen this movie over 15 times. He said my best friend owned it, and Harry Warden. Wasn't that the villain's name? And I said yes. And if he listened to the rest of the episode before he texted that, he would have already known that. So, one other Joe Robinson correction, Jeremy. So we have a big show coming up on March 11th, which if you're listening to that is probably you're listening to this now. It's really soon. We have the Quiplash Tournament, Jeremy, Tournament of Champions. Justin Schlegel. Joe Robinson, myself, Violet Gray, Michael Furr, Tommy Simbazo. Basically, the who's who of the comedy scene is coming to this thing. And I want you to take a look at this flyer I have pulled up, Jeremy, right here. And I just want you to look at... this is what the bar made for us, okay? The bar made this flyer, and that's Joe Robinson right there.
What? Who is that?
I don't know who it is.
It's not Joe Robinson.
It's not Joe Robinson, though. He's not on the flyer. He's not.
I think that's probably Shia LaBeouf.
I don't know, but when the bar owner, he made this flyer, and he was like, how's the flyer look? You look good? I noticed right away it wasn't Joe Robinson. You know what I texted him? I said, it looks perfect. Put it out there. So now this is out online. Without Joe's picture on it.
You know, the picture you see in your head of anybody on radio is always different from in person. So, mm-hmm.
The funny part is, well, here's the thing. I'm doing this as a fun thing, right? This bar isn't paying me any money to put this show on, so I don't care, right? I don't care that the flyer's wrong. I don't want to do anything else. I'm already doing more work than I want to do for this, and the fact that it's going to go off... with hopefully without a hitch is going to be great. But if you guys haven't seen the Quiplash tournament thing, Quiplash is basically a very fun game that me and our comedian friends play, and we say the meanest things about each other. We basically roast each other through the answers in this game. So if you want to have a fun night of 90 minutes of watching people be really bad to each other, come see that. Jeremy, you got anything else new? How's the job hunting going, bro?
I might actually have a job. I think I'll be moving something like sheetrock. So, who knows?
Oh, you know what? They'll probably talk about this on the Rob and Joe show already. But I got to see some fun captions, screenshots between Joe and Chris Restivo talking.
Yeah.
And he's like, Joe's is like, listen, dude, we know you get welfare. It's not a big deal. I don't know why you're making a lie about it. And like, he was just like, and then Joe called a bluff. He's like, listen, I pulled it up. I see that you're on this, this, and that. I have access to those records. Joe doesn't. But he's like, listen, man, it's embarrassing. I don't want people to know about it. Like, so in our circle, we've been calling Chris Restivo the welfare queen now, which is really fun. It's a fun bit. So,
I think the only drama I had, I know people have been trying to call me, but I haven't checked my voicemail for like, I assume I got like a notification if somebody leaves a voicemail, which I don't think I've been getting. I don't know why. It should be automatic. Mm-hmm. Like if somebody leaves a voicemail, you should know. So I checked out my voicemail app and it's like, oh, okay. I had some actual messages from people. I get one message from some fucking lawyer, and this is like one of those, this is your last chance, this is for such and such lawyers, and I'm like, you guys are going to try to fuck me again. You guys are going to fucking shut down my account, and I'm going to have to go cashless, I'm going to go with fucking cash again. Gosh, I fucking hated it, man.
Man,
the convenience of using a bank and not having to go to a check cashing place every and put your money somewhere and use money orders. Oh gosh, it's a fucking nightmare. And they fucked me over for what, 6 to 8 months.
Why don't you just declare bankruptcy?
I have. And the only question was whether or not they try to go after my wife's house. And I don't think I don't think it's enough to that they will. I just need to have a lawyer back me up on that. So,
man,
it's and here's the thing: I had already gone under because of the months that I couldn't even go on unemployment.
Well, let me tell you this to all our listeners here: this is the perfect opportunity. You want to help Jeremy out of financial straits? All of the proceeds to Quality Time Live. Justin and myself and Joe have already said the proceeds go to Jeremy Woodworth. So any profits that come from this goes directly to Jeremy Woodworth.
No, it goes straight to the wife who's been paying the mortgage alone. So.
Nope, not to her. This goes to the Jeremy Woodworth fund.
No, so pay off a credit card or two.
I don't know. I don't know what it's going
to
do.
It's up to what is it? If I count that one. The last time the lawyers said it was like between 4,000 and 9,000, and with my other real credit cards, it's 6,000.
I got to be honest with you, Jeremy. When you die in the next year or two, you're gonna make out scot free. I mean, this is gonna be you're gonna really fuck these banks over the second you're dead. I love it.
Did you hear about the guy on PayPal?
No.
They refunded him some money, and they made a little mistake by refunding him $250 million.
It's a couple zeros off. A couple zeros off right there.
Oh, the things you could buy. I'm thinking, isn't PayPal like bankrupt if they give you back $250 million? I mean, is PayPal worth that much?
Yeah, I don't think they can make $250 million go through.
I'm sure PayPal's worth at least a couple billion, but I didn't know they were worth $250 million. So.
Hey, Mr. Wobanowski? Mr. Wobanowski? I'm not sure this refund is right. Not now, Gerald. I'm working.
I'm getting a special Thanos full-size statue right now online. So. And an actual metal of Infinity Gauntlet for my hand that will control half the universe.
Yes.
And open my
talking.
Garage door.
So, Jeremy, where we left off last time in the storyline... obviously, we've established that there's immortals that live amongst us, that the Highlander is one of the last few ones, Connor McLeod. There is our antagonist. He's the Kurgan. And the story's being told in modern times, which is the mid-80s, and contrasting that with flashbacks to learn about how he became the man he is today from 500 years ago.
Except for the immortal Mario Van Peebles.
And don't forget... the Kurgan is the big bad guy.
That Black Knight was a Kurgan.
Hello, pretty.
So, let's not forget about the Kurgan, okay? He's always in the shadows, waiting to take off Connor McLeod's head. So,
it's better to burn out than fade away.
Ramirez has done a bunch of training with them, and the boys head into town back in the past. And he explains that, Connor, you can't have children. It's one thing about being immortal. You shoot blanks for the rest of your life. And, you won't. You want to leave your sweet wife Heather because you're going to watch her die slowly and painfully, and he tries to implore Connor to let her go.
McLeod, I was born 2,437 years ago. In that time, I've had three wives. The last was Shikiko, a Japanese princess. Her father, Masamune, a genius, made this for me. In 593 BC. It is the only one of its kind.
He made you a Hattori Hanzo sword?
Like his daughter. When Shikiko died, I was shattered. I would save you that pain. Please, let Heather go.
So let Heather go so he doesn't have to watch her get old and die. But later that night, Ramirez drops a little more insight on how the other immortals work.
When we first met, you felt ill, remember? That wasn't the first time you felt that sensation, was it?
No. When the MacLeods fought the Frasers, and a black knight felt it then. Only it was different, more painful.
That black knight was the Kurgan. It's because of him that I sought you out.
Who is the Kurgan, and where does he come from?
Well, the Kurgans were an ancient people from the steppes of Russia. For amusement, they tossed children into pits with hungry dogs to fight for meat. The Kurgan, he is the strongest of all the immortals. He is the perfect warrior. If he wins the prize, mortal man would suffer an eternity of darkness.
How do you fight such a savage?
With heart, faith, steel. In the end, there can be only one.
Boom. So, in the end, there can be only one, and the Kurgan is the big bad. Later that night, Ramirez is eating with Heather. Connor is not at the place. And then the motherfucking Kurgan shows up once again.
That black knight was a Kurgan.
Hello, pretty.
Heather, get out.
What's wrong?
Kurgan busts through the door like he's the Incredible Hulk, chops Kurgan. A table in half.
Ramirez.
So they start sword fighting inside Connor's meager five-story tower that he lives in, and he chops the fucking table in half, and they have some back and forth talking as they fight up the steps.
The Highlander! Where is he?
You're too late. I've prepared him for you.
You waste your time!
And while he does that, Ramirez slices his neck open, gives him his fucking gnarly scar that we see in the present. They fight closer and closer to the top, and Ramirez is able to throw him from, like, the top steps. But as they're fighting, they're fucking breaking parts of the stone wall, which doesn't really make sense because, like... They hit it and then the wall collapses in on him. It doesn't. I don't care. You know, I'm enjoying it, right?
And the worst thing that the Kurgan does is that he rapes his woman. He smokes his bowl and then leaves a booger underneath his throne.
Yep, that's how he rolls. Yep. That's how he rolls. And then the Kurgan eventually does this. As things are just crumbling around him, he lets out this scream. So Ramirez stabs him, he lets out that thing, but he pulls the sword out of him, and then eventually fucking takes her.
The woman?
She's mine.
Not for much longer.
He stabs him through his torso this time.
Tonight you sleep in hell. There can be only one!
And takes Ramirez's head clean off. And then a big old quickening happens that destroys most of the fucking tower after it's all done. But then you get this wonderful little line as Heather's looking around like, oh, is the Kurgan gone? Maybe he's done. His hand pops up out of nowhere and just goes, hello, pretty. And we'll find out more about what happened there. Now, back in the present, Brenda shows up to Nash's house, which is Connor McCloud's house. She asks questions. They get a little bit flirty. She leaves. Connor's assistant says that people keep asking about him, and we're thrown into another flashback, this time in World War II, where he finds the little girl who will be his future assistant, Rachel. He basically takes a bullet for her in World War II Nazi Germany and then ends up killing a fucking Nazi in the meantime.
So how old is Rachel in this?
Well, you figure if she's a child in the 1940s, so yeah. 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, so she's probably 50s-ish, right?
Even though she looks like she's 60.
She looks like she's 60 or 60-ish, yeah. But she's probably supposed to be high 50s.
High 50s.
High 50s, maybe early 60s, yeah. Right? Close enough, right? But this is her as a little girl back in Nazi Germany. And Connor's just been shot, and he's pretending to be dead on top of the girl. And we hear this right here.
Die.
Hey, it's a kind of magic.
Oh. So he's able to disarm this Nazi.
Such two, 10. Move. 9. Erst musst du mich erschießen.
Whatever you say, Jack. You're the master race.
And he just kills a Nazi. You know, just so you know, he's a good guy. There's nothing that puts you over with the crowd more than killing Nazis, you know?
Nothing like the bear Jew.
Nothing like the bear, das bear Juden.
So out of the park.
Back in the present, Rachel then says that, you know, Connor, you're just lonely. You refuse to let anyone love you. And he says, love is for poets. Connor heads over to his date that he set up with Brenda at her apartment. She hides a recorder, like a tape recorder and a gun. She's trying to get the fucking juicy info. She leaves to go to the bathroom. Connor immediately finds the recorder and the gun. Like, within 2 seconds, he's like, the classic recorder in the thing. Everyone knows this one. So they pour some brandy, and it's from 1783, and he just starts rattling off, like, oh, 1783 was a good one. It's when
1783, that's when the Beatles released their first album.
Yes. So he gives her, and he gets fucking her pussy all wet with his fucking knowledge of history, and then he brings a gift for her. She opens it up. It's her book. So her cover is basically
1783
blown.
Henry Ford makes the first Model A. You don't seem to know anything about history. I make it all up as I go along. I'm Connor McCloud. I'm Scottish, dude.
Bitch, I was there. I actually saw George Washington in his beautiful, whimsical wig that he wore as he signed the Declaration of Independence before my katana sword. Stimpy, you idiot.
Here's an idea. Why don't you call it the United States of America?
Originally, they were going to call it Washingtonian of Unitedness. I was like, why not call it America?
I was in a bar with Thomas Jefferson. Which, by the way, I think there is a deleted scene of that got burned in a fire, so... the other thing that we didn't mention, I think Clancy Brown had tried to do some of the stunt scenes with Sean Connery, came in, went to chop up one of these chandeliers in his little domicile, and apparently almost decapitated Sean Connery, to which Sean Connery said, fuck this shit, I don't want to be on set for apparently. He might have actually tried to walk off set, I think.
That's cool that Clancy Brown almost killed Sean Connery. That rocks.
Yeah, so a little sloppy there.
Good for Clancy Brown. That's good. If you accidentally, you know, struck him, that'd be tight. Now that it's all the jig is up, her cover is blown, she knows that Connor is in it. Connor confronts Brenda.
You bastard. Where did you find this?
I have an extensive library.
I read books.
Odd thing.
I found
your bio
your
doesn't
book.
Mention the Met. It says you work for the police. In forensics. Are you and Moran trying to set me up?
I don't work for Moran.
Then why is that bald policeman sitting outside watching your apartment? You remember him. Moran's sitting tailing me.
What are you going to do?
The question is, what are you going to do? You going to turn off the tape or are you going to shoot me with a 45?
I am not looking for a killer. I am looking for a sword, the one used on Faziel. I found pieces of it under the garden. I only want to see the samurai.
Why?
I told you because it's not supposed to exist. I dated pieces of the blade at 600 BC. The metal had been folded 200 times. Now, the Japanese didn't start making swords like that till the Middle Ages. So where the hell did it come from? If I could verify the existence of such a weapon, it would be like discovering a 747 1,000 years before
if
the Wright brothers ever flew.
If I could find that sword.
And nothing. I can see that you're getting wet at the talking of swords. This
it
is
was
like
folded 200 times.
I gotta be honest with you. This Brenda is basically every incel's like dream girl. You're like, oh, she knows about swords. Oh god.
You know, girls really only want guys with really good nunchuck skills anyway.
Nunchuck
so,
skills. Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't go really well.
There's no time.
And now we have the song, the music of Queen, to show the separation between both of them. They just can't be together, you know? Although, I gotta be honest with you, this Queen soundtrack is banging, dude. And this is a goddamn good song, okay?
It's the most beautiful songs written from a guy to another guy.
Hell yeah, man. You can't fuck my ass. Wants to fuck my asshole. Who dares to bang my asshole?
Ooh. When you have AIDS.
So this then puts him into another flashback where he sees Heather grow old, and Heather looks, they put Heather in like old woman makeup at one point.
Not very well.
She's still pretty hot. I gotta be honest with you. I see her in old makeup in a fucking Pornhub video. I don't scroll past. I stop right there and I take the long walk through and breathe it in like a brandy.
I wonder at what age Jamie Lee Curtis is not bangable.
It's now. You bang.
Oh,
wait a minute.
Yeah.
You bang Jamie Lee Curtis
in
the new Halloween movie?
Yeah.
No, definitely. She looks like she owns 9 cats now. It looks fucking horrible.
No, the Activia is still working.
That pussy smells like actual pussy cat now.
I bet you it doesn't really sag until like age 90.
Ugh, no. Fuck, dude. You're gross.
He's still pretty tight.
No.
even on a trampoline.
It sounds horrible, man. So,
hey, she's no Liza Minnelli, because Liza Minnelli lost it at age 70.
Next, we see McCloud meet up with another immortal guy he's like, oh, McCloud, you hanging out for the gathering? Good to see you. It's his one black friend.
I hate to say, I almost thought it was the guy from The Phantom Menace and Dogs of War, but I think I'm wrong.
He reminds McCloud of a little incident he had back in 1783 in Boston, and it's a pretty fun scene where he's talking to some, it looks like an English nobleman, and probably in the U.S.
I think it was George Washington.
He keeps stabbing him like over and over again. He's like, very good. Now, how about one more time that we talk about this duel? And he eventually just he yields to him when he pulls out the gun. And he's like, it's fine. And the guy's so mad that he shoots his assistant in the back with a musket. Which, it's a fun, whimsical murder scene.
It's a good thing
really
that they
good.
Use the sword that actually can't cut his head off, so.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, the Kurgan is on the move again.
Did you ever see the duel where the guy's like, we either go with swords or with muskets? The guy's like, well, I'm a gentleman, I'll use the sword. And he's like, okay, then your other guy gets the musket. And
what?
So I think that was Fry and Laurie. So did you actually know Laurie before?
No, didn't know Hugh Laurie.
So much baggage from the 80s, because that's what he did. And I was like, I can't even see him on House as actually being a serious character. I'm still waiting to like break character any second.
I still love that. I still love that meme that shows Peter Dinklage with one of the mushrooms from Mario Brothers, and then it shows House as like like if he gets the mushroom, that's big, big. Peter Dinklage looks like tiny, shrunk down House. So.
And I also need to see the accidental tourist. So.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, where he walks around town and somewhere in New Jersey. So,
after that, after McCloud meets with him, the Kurgan is on the move again, and they are really trying to make him seem like the Terminator. Like they almost give him like the same drums, like dun 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 dun, like
that. And he's wearing a leather jacket.
Dun 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 dun. Like they make him. He's about to leave his horrible, shitty motel when he talks to the sleazeball guy that runs the hotel desk, who clearly has like herpes on his lip. Like he looks terrible.
And just the nutty, bummy black guy that just hangs out.
He's like, hell yeah, man! Yo, this motherfucker with herpes is hilarious. But they had this fun little interaction right here.
Hey Rockefeller, how'd you like candy? She said you were kind of kinky, huh?
Don't ever speak to me.
Look, I didn't mean it.
Don't ever speak to me again. Do you understand? Good.
I hope you get your head chopped off, asshole.
Yeah. Thank you, old drunk man.
Thanks. Man, I just want to own a small business where I can have one drunk guy that just sits there all day and gets hammered. Like, Jeremy, my dream is to own a motel where you don't have to do anything. You just sit there and get hammered and laugh at people. Like, hey, send candy on in.
Hey, your meth delivery is here, so come on down.
Hell yeah, dude. So he leaves that horrible hotel. Next, we see a local vigilante who is in what could be the weirdest part of this movie. In a movie about immortals that do mortal combat, this is such an out-of-place scene, and it makes almost zero sense. There's basically a vigilante that's cruising the streets of New York loaded with guns. Now, Jeremy, there were lots of vigilantes in the 80s that maybe were vigilantes big back then or what?
I don't know. Maybe like Bernard Goetz, who shot guys on the subway because they had screwdrivers in their hands.
Is that a real thing?
Oh, that was a big thing back then.
I don't know about Bernard Goetz.
He's the only real vigilante that was ever in the news. So.
Okay. He's a regular Charlie Bronson, huh?
I think he took out four. He took off four on the subway when the subway was really, really a garbage place to be. So
okay,
I think not enough people had guns since then. It's actually cleaned up quite a bit. So you name the actor. Name the actor.
I don't know this actor. Who's the actor playing the vigilante?
Chris Malcolm.
Okay, and what is Chris Malcolm known for other than this?
He was in a little movie called Empire Strikes Back, and he is otherwise known as Zev, who was Rogue Two, searching for Han and Luke out in the snow. The next morning.
Oh, he's just like, I found him. He's here. That's the same guy?
That's
oh,
Zeph.
My God. I didn't realize that.
But
what a good find.
If you're a big fan of the comic strip with the Young Ones and those lot, he is in A Fistful of Traveler's Checks, where he runs the restaurant, and Rick Mayall and the drummer from Bad News show up, and they're like, we want steaks. Well, how many steaks you want? 2, 5, 10. 10 steaks each. 10 steaks, guys. Oh, I don't know if I can do it. Well, get them. And so he that's his little bit part as the restaurant owner. So.
Okay.
And he also tries to please the guests with a little jukebox by putting on some Eagles. He's like, oh, everyone loves the Eagles. And the thing starts skipping, and he hits the jukebox, and he hurts his hands. Ah! So that's a good little rolls right there.
It's a good bit. Good bit.
So, yeah.
So the vigilante gets out of his car and he comes upon Connor's other mortal friend who has a scimitar and is fighting the Kurgan in the alleyway. And he comes up on him just as the Kurgan fucking cuts that dude's head off. The vigilante gets up and fucking unloads all hell on him.
Literally 100 rounds. So. Reload.
So smokes the Kurgan, but the Kurgan gets up and he's fucking not happy about what's just happened. He takes his fucking giant sword, sticks it and impales him, and then holds him up in the air and just looks at him as the guy's going, oh, no.
It's a good thing he doesn't slide into the extra, you know, knives towards the bottom of the hilt. So.
And then he throws the guy into the corner and fucking takes his sword out as a giant quickening happens. Lightning's fucking striking him over and over again. The windows are getting blown out in this alleyway. And there's a small fucking group of people that are just watching him. I mean, New York City streets, busy place. They're all like, look at that motherfucking white ass bitch getting hit by lightning. And then he's getting all lit up. And then the Kurgan gets up to get the fuck out of there and goes and basically goes over to this car, opens it like a tuna can with his fucking sword, rips the top off, throws the driver out, but Mom is still riding in the passenger side seat.
Mother God.
Mom.
Yeah, put on some G.G. Allin.
So then he takes Grandma on a wild ride right after that.
Riding the Jeep on the people that I meet, fully loaded tiny gun.
So it was funny.
I just lost the headphones.
I saw a G.G. Allin meme. Well, plug yourself back in.
Give a little adjustment.
So he takes him on that wild ride. Jeremy, somehow the vigilante who got impaled, he's alive the next day. It makes zero sense at all, but
he was just stabbed.
Merely a flesh wound, went in and out, right?
He's just like Tony Stark. He just needs some nanites to plug himself up.
The cops go to talk to him, talk to the vigilante.
Give me a trunkload of shotguns, like 3 big bore battle rifles, and ammo up the ass. And I ain't safe. I can't protect myself.
Okay, take it easy, pal. Take it easy.
That weirdo man, he got up after I put enough lead in him to drop a rhino.
Hey, listen. You think you could work with one of our artists, maybe come up with a picture of this guy?
Sure.
So, he helps him draw the shittiest sketch ever of the Kurgan that you see on the front line, the front page news the next day. But he does remember the scar on his neck, right? Which is a big tell. He goes to tell him about what he saw with the lightning and all the shit. And the cops literally look at this guy like, this guy's fucking. Before he wasn't crazy, but now he's nuts, right? Mm-hmm. So after that, Brenda heads to the library. Which was, for people that are listening now, library was the internet of the 1980s, okay? That's where you could actually find information. You had to look in books. She's looking at microfiche. She finds out that Nash's birthday was actually a dead kid, and that Nash is really just impersonating him, and that his property records just go from orphan, dead orphan to dead orphan, and this guy pretty much fucking lays it out for him.
Marvin Nash.
After running the signatures in like what is clearly like an MS-DOS based fucking program that's like analyzing
it. I'm going to say Apple II.
Yeah, it's an Apple II computer.
They're like green screen.
Beep, 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 beep. And they're like, it all matches up all the signatures.
Man, I can't wait till computers actually have color screens someday.
And this guy gets his one bit part where he gets to say this.
So what you've got here, Brenda, is a guy who's been creeping around since at least 1700, pretending to croak every once in a while. Leaving all his goods to kids who've been corpses for years.
Corpses.
And assuming their identities.
Whoa.
He's probably a vampire. That's what he is.
I know this is going to sound crazy, Brenda, but this guy's been alive for 600 years. So
he probably ran into Tom Cruise at some time.
Next, we see Connor at a local church. And as we know, by the rules of how Highlanders work and immortals, holy ground is a neutral space. No fighting on holy ground. And
because you know
sure
what happens.
Enough,
The shadow monsters come out of the ground and start taking you back down.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to fuck with
the shadow monsters. Take you to Rape Town, so.
But just as Connor's trying to light a candle for his long-lost love, Heather, which he promises to do on her birthday, the Kurgan shows up.
Nice to see you, Kurgan. Who cut your hair?
I am in disguise.
I like that he says, I'm in disguise. All he did was shave his head. He still looks like a fucking mutant rocking around, right? He is. Oh, and it's also important to note that he put safety pins on his, like, his neck scar, like, just through the flesh in there. And he just looks like, oh, God. He looks like everything G.G. Allen wanted to be right now. Like, just a giant man.
G.G. Allen thought about slashing his own throat just to have a cool scar.
So the Kurgan and Connor have a little duel of words.
This way no one will recognize me.
I do. What do you want?
Your head. And the prize. Watch. Happy Halloween, ladies!
He talks to some nuns going by. This is such a great scene for him, though.
No sense of humor.
Ramirez's blade did not cut deeply enough.
I love the contrast of how bad of an actor Christopher Lambert is during this. It's like, was Gerard Depardieu not available to play the Highlander? Like, I mean, it's fucking so bad. But here, there's some more Kurgan here.
He was right about you, you're slime.
Ramirez was an effete snob. He died on his knees. I took his head and raped his woman before his blood was even cold. She was not his woman. She was your woman. And she never told you.
And then he goes...
I don't know why.
And then he responds
Perhaps
with this.
Perhaps I gave her something you never could.
Oh, what I'm gonna do to you. I'm so angry. First, I'm gonna tear your lips out. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. And then I'm gonna gouge your eyes out. You scared, huh? Next, I'm gonna tear your arms out of the socket. And you wanna know what else? I'm gonna hit you, and you're gonna fall. And I'm gonna look down, and I'm gonna laugh. But first, I gotta take a whiz.
I mean, that's probably Christopher Lambert's best part in this movie so far, right?
You know,
I gotta take a whiz.
The Kurgan can really read facial looks after he tells him that revelation. So
yeah, he's good, man. He's good. All right, let's hear what Christopher. I'm sorry, that was Ren Hoek from Ren and Stimpy. But let's hear the final closing.
I couldn't tell the difference.
I mean, I know it's hard. It's hard.
Our sins.
After all this is going down, the priest comes over.
That shall be his undoing. Father, forgive me. I am a worm. I have something to say. It's better to burn out than to fade away.
Just in the church. Oh, that sweet Kurgan,
well,
man.
He loves those good old hymns like Rock of Ages. So
Brenda then goes to confront Connor about what she knows. He fesses up that he's immortal, and to prove it to her, he stabs himself in his own chest just to show her. He's like, oh, I'm immortal, right? And as she's holding the knife and sees that he's alive, that's when they have their first kiss. It's like, oh, there's nothing like... Brenda is into incels, is what I'm getting at. And he's like, would I have to stab myself for you so you love me? Brenda, I must... I must let out the bloodletting to show you how serious I am about our relationship.
Now, before I put something in you, you can put something into me.
I need you to put this 19th century dagger deep into my womb.
And she's looking at, oh, look at this knife. Don't look at the knife. Think about me. I'm French.
They immediately go and they have some sexy time right after that, because nothing says I'm ready to fuck like I just stabbed you. So they wake up the next day and she said, most people are afraid to live or afraid to die. You're afraid to live.
I'm thinking that everything is, what's the word? Blocked out.
Yeah.
Like,
very blocked.
In this scene, you're gonna suck on her nipples a little bit, and you know, obviously a little pelvic pounding kind of deal, and then a little bit more nipple sucking. So
hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Okay, how do you want me in this to put my butt in so that my butt looks good? So.
Where is the best way to show my French ass?
I like reading up on movies like Hellraiser, how the first guy gets killed by what's her name was like, he really wanted to get naked for the scene. He's like, look, we don't need nakedness. We don't want you to get naked.
Stop. Put your clothes back on, like, for the love of God.
Exactly. It's like, no, I was prepared to get naked. And I remember as an actor, the first time I'm doing a sex scene with another dude, it was like... I remember thinking, like, look, I'm fine with, you know, pretending as long as my actual penis isn't against another man. So,
all right, cool.
You know, and I thought, well, the director could do this. That would look pretty realistic. And it's like, no, I'm going to do it that way. I'm like, whatever. Mm. Why am I having sex with another man in another scene anyway? You know, what does it matter? If you're going to barely show it. You know, whatever.
It's like, let me penetrate this dude and let's do it right.
I mean, I was already fluffed up and ready to spurt right in the camera face. What do you mean I don't get spurt in the camera? Gosh. I've been drinking.
You know, this would be a good scene if you filmed my ball sack going into her very slowly. I call this puppies in a barrel. As every time I get one ball in, the other one pops out before I can get the second one in.
And that's what we call romance. Sleepless in Seattle, too.
So Brenda leaves and goes home, but the motherfucking Kurgan is waiting for her.
Hello, pretty.
That black knight was a Kurgan.
Hello, pretty.
Okay, so nobody can save you from the Kurgan. He breaks down the door, abducts her, and then takes her on a fucking wild ride through the streets of New York, driving against traffic, basically just doing everything you do when you play GTA the first time. He just does in one thing. Runs over pedestrians, the whole lot.
Did we mention how this director had done like 1,000 music videos before this?
No, we haven't gotten into that.
And one of them, he did mention that he'd worked with Duran Duran, And I'm guessing that he didn't do Hungry Like the Wolf, but he probably did the video for Wild Boys.
Ooh.
Which, that's just my guess. I don't know for sure. But Hungry Like the Wolf, probably one of the best cinematography videos next to, like, Thriller, you know, Big Time Money. Wild Boys, really horrible. Really freaking just weird, and definitely like Highlander because it's got like an interesting cinematography. Not a great song, really, really of a kind of a gay video. So,
Highlander is a great song. Okay.
No, I'm talking about the Wild Boys.
Okay, Wild Boys. Duran Duran. Okay, that'll work.
Yeah, one of their worst.
So
it's no Save a Prayer for the Morning After. I'll tell you that.
The Kurgan leaves a good old-fashioned answering machine message for Connor because he was too busy to take the call, apparently. And he leaves this voice recording for him.
I can entertain myself. Your friend is a real screamer. Listen. Which part should I cut off first? I'll be waiting.
Well, she's just kind of laughing.
Mm. So he tells his assistant that he's not coming back and that she can have the power of attorney. And he goes, "You always knew this was going to happen, Rachel." And he was like, "Tonight, Russell Nash dies." So Connor goes to head for the Silver Cup sign atop of this building for his final battle. You can hear Brenda screaming from like the top. He gets up there, and the motherfucking Kurgan is ready to do battle. And listen, this fight seems pretty wild. It goes back and forth, as you'd expect it to do. I think it's pretty badass. They tumble off of the sign, and then the Kurgan just starts spinning and like chopping out the legs of this sign. Somehow, this also makes a water tower that's on the roof also crack. So now that they're fighting on like a foot or two of water on top of a giant electric sign, the sign falls in at one point, and now they're electrified, fighting each other. So it's almost like Star Wars-esque at moments. Eventually, they have like those classic windows, that like the skylight windows. They crash through that, and very, very cinematic like backdrop because it's like this blue windows, and it's just their silhouettes fucking fighting against it. I think this scene looks really fucking cool cinematography-wise.
It's pretty much like a Nestle's Crunch commercial from the 80s.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Or like Flash Dance, if you will. Yes. You know, a lot of dancing, except with sword fights.
Like, she's really doing really cool dancing that's breakdancing, but she still has a mustache.
Yeah. So it's
true story, by the way.
Pretty badass fight scene here. But eventually, the Kurgan does fucking the one thing that Ramirez told him never to do. Never overextend yourself with a lunge, bro. You can't ever do that because it leaves you off balance and open for attack.
My favorite is when they're both come together as they're sword fighting and both have a Coors Light in their hands as they're drinking it. So
nothing gets me more immortal than a Coors Light.
When I'm way I'm fighting, I have to stay fit and drink light beer.
So he finally gets the kill shot on the Kurgan.
And the theme from Monty Python's Meaning of Life. Nothing during that fight saying, "I'm okay." Oh, except my head fell off.
And then a giant quickening happens as Connor
Don't look at it, Marion!
Yeah, it's very poltergeist-esque. There's just souls, like, flying all around, zapping him and going into Connor's body, going...
I'd almost say Fantasia. Back to Bald Mountain.
And so Connor's won. He's won the ultimate prize. He's taken the Kurgan's head. And, Jeremy, what is the ultimate prize?
50% off at Denny's.
Yes, 50%.
I am ready to claim my prize for eternity at Denny's.
As you can see, I would like the Alabama Slammer for free.
I am ready for my greatest discount of all time.
I killed hundreds of men for this.
That can be only one. The discount is mine.
Oh, God.
I can eat a lot in a single sitting.
No, but we do get to hear what the prize is from Connor.
You will get the largest boner that any man has ever had.
So, this is where it all began. Can you tell me about the prize?
It's like a whirlwind in my head. But if I concentrate, I know what people are thinking all over the world. Presidents, diplomats, scientists. I can help them understand each other.
I finally understand Scientology.
You're thinking whether or not you can love me. You can. I'm just...
The Mormons were right. That is actually the true religion. I didn't want to tell you. Joseph Smith had it completely correct.
With the Urman and Thurman, I can read anything.
Like you, I can love and have children. Live and grow old. You never prepared me for that, you Spanish peacock.
Patience, Highlander. You have done well.
You stupid Dago prophet.
But it will take time. Your generation is being born and dying. You're at one with all living things. Each man's thoughts and dreams are yours to know. You have power beyond imagination. Use it well, my friend.
Wouldn't it be great on the last episode of Real Jeopardy, Sean Connery actually shows up just to fuck with Alex Trebek?
Yes, so. I would love it. So the prize is nothing. Like, first of all, if the Kurgan won, how does this... So the Kurgan would just die. Like, they were worried that, like, they would... Remember it was sold to us, he's like... They would plunge mankind into an eternity of darkness. I was like, no, like, so 50 years of darkness, I guess, because the Kurgan will just die.
The prize is a t-shirt and an 8-track of the movie Thank God It's Friday.
Now, I will say, as dumb of an ending of this is, the show really fixed it all, guys. Go back, enjoy the show, Highlander, because it is a goddamn treat. Other than Clancy Brown fucking crushing the bad guy in this. Highlander isn't the greatest film, I'll say it. Even though I look at it with rose-colored glasses on real hard. But that brings us to an end of the Highlander, Jeremy. Final thoughts, feelings, emotions.
My favorite was the Highlander meeting the Highlander. Like, they were sitting all of a sudden different characters that, you know, weren't the same at the same time.
Well, no, they are. You're talking about the Highlander and the Highlander.
Yes.
So, in the Highlander of the show, that's Duncan MacLeod. Duncan MacLeod is born 100 years after Connor MacLeod.
Of course.
So they're completely different. They're both from Highlander.
I've seen MacLeod. At least two episodes.
Man, you're missing out, Jeremy.
When I didn't turn the channel after the opening music.
Man... The show is the only thing that actually did the Highlander like world right by me. It's awesome.
Now you say you're a true fan, but you never got the entire video series on VHS from Dad.
I didn't.
That he had in the living room. So.
Although I think that was just season 1 and 2.
Yeah.
On VHS. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I probably should have grabbed that physical media, but I'm not a VHS guy. You know?
I'm more of a Friday the 13th, the TV series guy. So.
Yeah.
Which I hope they turn into another series with the Annabelle doll. So
yes.
Oh, look, a little monkey that has a little clapping thing. It's evil. Don't touch it. So.
Hey, there's one Highlander movie called Highlander Endgame, and that's with Connor MacLeod and Duncan MacLeod, where Duncan MacLeod ultimately kills Connor, and the cooler Highlander gets to live because they basically agree to have a fight so that one of them becomes powerful enough to beat the big bad in that movie. So,
and then they go cruising stuff. With special hankies in the backs of their pocket.
Well, water sports
made eye contact.
Now I get it, man. It's good stuff.
Well, you
it
know, is. Cruising the game is awesome for kids.
What the fuck? It's the best. It is the best, Jer. It is the best. So, anyway, Jeremy.
Is this going to be post the show that we do with Finland? So,
Yeah, we'll do the post show with Quinlan. Well, Quinlan will be on next week's episode, so check that out.
But this will be aired the same week or after or before?
After. Yeah. It'll be our next episode with Quinlan. Now, anyway.
We recorded this in 2019 around June.
Yes. So. Hey, check out all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. Guys, buy some Quality Time live show tickets. They are available right now. Hop on ericcomedy.com. Go get it. Our Facebook page. All that bullshit. Help us out. Jeremy, get us out of here.
The prize is yours. Grand Slam for 50% off.
That Black Knight was a Kurgan.
Hello, pretty.
No one can save you from the nightmare of the Kurgan. No one can save you from another night of the Kurgan. Yeah, it's coming. Let go of your friends. I'm not going to be in the morning. It's me from another run. Okay, hang on. I'm a man. 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 I'm a man.